Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics. Right before spring break, legislative session in the heat of the moment, and we had a big retirement this week. Roy Blunt announced he was not going to run for re-election. Here to talk about it is a rising star in the Republican Party, a man with a heck of a feather in his cap, passed one of the biggest education bills, reform bills, House has ever passed, Representative Phil Christofanelli from St. Charles County. Welcome back to This Week in Missouri Politics.
Glad to be with you, Scott.
Gosh, we got to start off first. Roy Blunt, I mean, when you make your Mount Rushmore of Missouri United States Senators, Thomas Hart Benton, Kit Bond, Roy Blunt, and then you could probably debate the fourth. It's just staggering to think of the people, the miles of road you could drive on in this state, the water you could drink out of, the sewer line that was laid, the infrastructure of this state, how Kit Bond handed that baton off to Roy Blunt, and he didn't drop it. I mean, what an amazing Missouri statesman.
Yeah, Roy will absolutely go down as one of the great legends in Missouri politics. Very few people in American history have ever had the privilege to serve both in House and Senate leadership at the federal level. And whether you agreed with Roy on issues or not, I think everyone understood that he always went to Washington and put Missouri first. And for that, I'm really grateful for his service.
There was never a day he wasn't twisting somebody's arm to help some community in Missouri. I mean, look, the NGA just down the street, I think you can honestly say that is not there. That is in Illinois without Roy Blunt. And you could go around the state and look at so many things he did. It really is. I mean, if Kit Bond, if you got in the truck and drove around Missouri with Kit Bond, he might not tell you, but if you only knew how much of that road you'd be driving on with something Kit Bond did, it is an amazing legacy the Blunt family is leaving the state.
It absolutely is. They have put together a political operation that has commanded respect not only in our state but across the country, and has really done a lot of good work for the people of this state and the people of this nation.
Let's talk about a political accomplishment that you have. Education empowerment scholarships that you know, I honestly thought that was something that you would never see rural Republicans actually vote for. But you were able to, in an amazing thing, articulate the message. You had to feel kind of like you were working at a daycare, keeping everybody in line, and explaining a very complicated public policy. Give our viewers that may not know what exactly we're talking about just the 5-cent version of what your bill does.
Absolutely. Empowerment scholarships empower parents and students to choose the education that works best for them. And so the way it works is that education assistance organizations, nonprofit groups, will be able to raise money for scholarships that they can give to kids in really desperate situations, so kids that are very low income or have some sort of learning disability, so that they can access an alternative school. And that could be a private school, it could be a public school in another district that they would have to pay for.
Does that include a Catholic school?
It would include a Catholic school.
A lot of people in St. Louis I know go to Catholic schools.
Yeah, I went to Catholic school myself, and there's a lot of great Catholic schools across our state that sometimes can meet the needs of a student better than this district that they happen to be born in.
So I see these bills pass sometimes, and you go down to Twin Bridges there in Jeff City, but out in the county, one of the places you know you're in the county because they have smoking. How do they know? How does somebody there know about these? Let's say
sure.
You're watching this show. You may know how to access if you're watching this show. Maybe you got a nephew or a niece in Shelbina, home of Norm Stewart and Cindy O'Loughlin's home county. How could they find out how to access one of these accounts?
Well, I think there's going to be three main ways. The first is the organizations that are raising this money are going to have an interest in making sure that students sign up for the program, and so they're going to be marketing it. Second, the schools that can now accept these students that previously wouldn't have been able to ever afford to attend their institution are going to go out and try to connect the parents and kids with these type of scholarships. And third, the parents themselves, I hear every day, are desperate for choices. They want options for their kids, and they're looking to the state to obtain them. And so I believe that these scholarships are going to go fast. I don't think that they're just going to sit on the table. Parents want them, and they're going to use them.
Do you think, my gut tells me there's a lot of St. Louis, your constituents in St. Charles, St. Louis area folks, maybe in Kansas City area folks, they may be the most inclined because the larger school options are close together, because the urban areas connect a lot of those. I think it may be something that the more people take advantage of, you're right, but it may be more, if you want to go to Dexter, it's 30 miles from Sykeston. A little harder to do, but in St. Louis, those options, like Nick Shore, his kid goes to school where he'd moved to go to school, is very close, which makes it workable for their family.
Sure, yeah, and another thing that we tried to do to make this bill best for the whole state is that we made sure that the scholarships would only take effect if the state significantly increased its commitment to school transportation budgets. And so that was a compromise that I made with many of my rural colleagues that felt very strongly that we needed to do more to help their constituents with transportation. And so I'm proud that we were able to come to an agreement that everybody was happy with.
As a kid that rode the old yellow dog 45 minutes one way to Neelyville schools, I am grateful that you could make that trip a little easier on kids. That is something people do not think about. Munslinger, Senator Munslinger thought about it. That has been about the only one. Next, you know, you're a politician. Now, this is only going to help this legislative accomplishment, I'm sure. But you're someone that's talked about as a potential state Senate candidate, a person moving up in the House. You chair the very powerful Rules Committee now. It's interesting how in these days and times, people expect to know more about not just the political position, but the personal lives of their leaders. And I was really honored when you mentioned, when you come on and talk about your education bill, that you would share some things about your personal life. And that meant a lot to me. You'd choose to share that with our audience.
Sure. Scott, something that a lot of people know about me, but I never really talked about in a public forum before, is the fact that I'm gay. I shared that with my friends and family when I was about 16 years old. But since that time, it's really just been like a small part of my personal life that I never really advertised much, but also didn't take very many pains to hide. But I've been dating someone now for about a year, and so I thought it would be important to share that fact with my constituents and the Capitol community.
You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see as a Republican the reaction to that. I think 99% of the folks are going to be either don't care or very welcoming and encouraging. I'm honored you'd share that. That had to be a tough decision to make internally. I know you've never denied who you were to anyone, never lied to anybody, but sharing that openly has got to be a tough decision.
You know, Scott, sometimes we're called to make tough decisions when we sign up for public office. And you're right, people do want to know a little bit more about their representative and their life and their values. And I'm happy to share that information.
I think it says a lot about not just the Republican Party but in Missouri, but also our culture and where how far the state's come. That, I mean, you're someone that is by any means, if you had a new guy that wrote a tip sheet, you'd be a guy that's maybe the top contender for that state Senate seat, which is a great legacy. Elman, Dempsey, now Igel. And I think this is something that's going to not even factor into the debate. I think that says a lot of very good things about where we've come as a culture.
Yeah, I think things have changed. They've changed dramatically in my own lifetime. And I've never personally felt like my personal life cost me anything politically. And I'm very blessed for that.
Let's talk about some issues. We mentioned Senator Igel. He took a little bit of floor time this week discussing his plan to kind of, I don't know if it's phase out personal property taxes, but basically inhibit the growth of property tax in this state. That is something, if you're in St. Louis County, my goodness, you pay some property taxes. Holy cow. Share what that is and what maybe the future for that bill would be if it got to the House.
Oh, absolutely. I think the House would be very excited to take a big bill like that from the Senate and really deliver on the promises that we made to our constituents when we ran for office. One of the things that I admire about Senator Igel and why I worked so hard on his first and second campaign is that he was very clear. He wanted to go to Jefferson City to reduce the size of government and cut people's taxes. And the thing that was different about Bill is that he actually went to the Senate and started doing those things. And so I think that there are many people in the House that want to deliver on those type of promises that we have made to our folks back home. And so I hope that he does send us a bill.
The reason I've enjoyed getting to know you in Jefferson City is you're a serious person. Some people do press release stuff, and every politician has to play politics, and it's naive to think they don't. But you do the math. If you do phase this out, how are you going to pay for schools? I mean, that's where most property tax money goes.
Sure. You're going to have to find offsets. Missouri is somewhat unique in having this particular type of tax structure. And there are states across the country that have made it work either through their other sales taxes, other fees. You have to find a way that you can't pull the rug out from an established system. You have to find an off-ramp such that everybody's needs are still met and the state can pay its bills. But some of these really unique and particular taxes can be reduced when they're so burdensome on the average taxpayer.
Now, I've had this conversation so many times. People will pull me aside and they'll be like, now seriously, do you think the election was stolen? And these are serious people. They mean it. They have suspicions, right? I personally don't think the election was, I think it may have been a little sloppy, but I think the person that got the most votes won the election. But there's a lot of folks that have real concerns. And there's some bills moving that might try to tighten up Missouri's election processes. I think it's always comical when we worry about other states, but here in Missouri, what are some of the things the House is working on to tighten up our elections?
Sure, Scott. And no matter what you believe about the 2020 election, and I've had many of these conversations with my constituents, what is important to me is that the average voter, the people back home, yeah, have faith and confidence that our elections are being run securely. And in many ways right now, they simply do not. And so there's a bill moving through the House, and we've done this many times before, but we have to do it again to require photo IDs when people go in to the ballot box to make sure that they are who they say they are. There's some things that we are taking care of as far as it dealt with mail-in ballots. Mail-in ballots were perhaps necessary when we had the COVID crisis. But I think generally it's a good practice for people to vote in person, and so we're going to try to encourage that as much as possible. And the goal of this bill is to make sure that everybody walks away from the election feeling like it was fair.
So the last thing, we're going to have Jim Murphy on, the quote machine, the greatest quotes in Missouri politics. He's carrying a bill about shutdowns. Mostly, I mean, we could say it, but it's pointed at St. Louis County.
Sure.
What should be, take all hyperbole out, what is the best public policy for, you probably have to have some mechanism to have some of these lockdowns, but what is the right mechanism for a county to go through before they do a shutdown?
Yeah, and I've worked with Representative Murphy on this, and he deeply cares about making sure that his constituents have access to the basic public services like restaurants and entertainment, and that is something we absolutely must do. And I think we've really found a good compromise here, and that is the executive branch of your county can take certain unilateral actions in order to protect the public health, but they need to go back to the people's legislative representatives, their county councilmen, and get approval for that on a very regular basis, because if the people don't have an avenue to outlet their support for a different path, then they become very frustrated. And so having that accountability, having that separation of powers and that balance of power, I think is really the answer to the problem. And I think that Jim is getting really close to achieving that.
Representative, I'm honored you chose our viewers to come and share things with. And I'm always appreciative you come and share your views on This Week in Missouri Politics.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
We'll be right back. That quote machine himself, Jim Murphy from South County, will be on our Opinion Maker panel after this.
All across Missouri, our new car and truck dealers are building strong local economies. When you buy a car or truck in Missouri, you're helping to support over 20,000 Missouri families who rely on the auto industry for good-paying local jobs. You're also helping fund our communities, schools, first responders, and our roads, because dealers generate millions of dollars in tax revenue. Missouri's automobile dealers have been the foundation of our communities for generations and for generations to come. The Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, the heart of Missouri.
For more than a century, the St. Louis Carpenters Union has shaped our communities. Through trusted alliances, we deliver skilled professional craftspeople, while our business partners provide the kind of quality jobs that keep our economy humming. It's a blueprint that has worked since 1882. Turning Missouri into a right-to-work state stalls progress, wipes out jobs, and kills momentum. Right to work is wrong for everyone. Let's keep Missouri moving forward. Visit carpdc.org to learn more.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan, advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work.
Welcome back to This Week in Missouri Politics. Ryan Hawkins, Democratic strategist. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Peter Meredith, one of the most quotable men in the Missouri House of Representatives. Welcome back, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And the St. Patty's Day tradition, we have Peter Meredith and Jim Murphy. Speaking of quotable men, thank you for coming back, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And the dean of the Missouri Republican Party, David Barkledge. David, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. I wanted to say something in your last segment about the representative coming out. It's something to, one, tell your family or tell your friends, but to be a Republican elected official and to come out on TV is very brave. And kudos to him. And
yes.
let everybody embrace him and let him know that he is always accepted, as he always has been.
I've had an admiration for Representative Chris Smalley for a long time, but it certainly grew this morning. David Barklage, you wouldn't think it'd be this fun politically already. I mean, it's just St. Paddy's Day, but here we are. Senator Blunt, let's talk about him first. One of the most remarkable statesmen, delivered so much money to this state for Republican, Democrat era, it didn't matter. He really built a lot of the infrastructure of this state.
Look, there are two kinds of senators, those that talk and those that do, and he was one of those ones that do. You have all the rank partisanship that would divide us, yet Roy Blunt was in every negotiation rather than a microphone. And you can't find a road, a bridge, a school, or an institution that wasn't benefited by him fighting for Missourians. And you can put it in crass terms and say, well, those were earmarks or this or that, but it benefited the people of the state.
Doesn't matter to people in Fredericktown.
And candidly, it's a lot easier nowadays to be an ideologue and to have everybody love you for that than be a guy who actually made government work. And he made government work in the House as a leader, in the Senate as a leader, in Missouri as a leader. He is responsible as much as anybody for the majorities that we had in the House and Senate. And he never took a bow. He never took credit. He will be sorely missed.
You know, Peter, you're a person I know that cares about actual government working. And take the votes aside, because I understand people have honest differences on those. In the back room, he delivered for this state.
Yeah, you know, I hate to agree here, but he was an excellent statesman.
It's easier.
And ideologically, I might have been extremely upset with him on a regular basis. True. But he, when it came to constituent services, he was there for people. Yeah. And when it came to putting Missouri interests first, I think that he did a great job of that.
Now, Jim Merville, let's talk about the race to replace him. With him out, the first person I know that's made serious moves to get in is Eric Schmidt.
Right.
It appears as though he's in the race. You have former Governor Eric Greitens. Looks like he's kind of in New York, but he's dying to get back to New Madrid and run. You've got your Congresswoman Ann Wagner, Jason Smith, my congressman, talking about it, and even Mike Kehoe still in the discussion.
And isn't it fun?
Isn't it fun for me? Maybe a little challenging for you.
I think it's great for the Republican Party that we have so many qualified people to do this.
That's true.
I mean, you know, a small bench is really the worst thing that could happen to a party. We've got genuine superstars that can go for this, whether it be Kehoe or Schmidt. I think Schmidt's probably got the upper hand. I applaud Secretary of State for saying, you know, I'm not going
to. I actually believed him when he gave his reasons why he wasn't running. I've never really believed, so he could have had this seat.
Oh, absolutely.
But when he said he didn't want to run for it, I kind of believed his reasons. It was an odd thing.
It's his family.
Yeah. David Barklage, you have seen more of these than anybody else I know. You saw 92, which was a blood fight. Mm-hmm. Are we heading toward a blood fight, or is it going to be Greitens versus somebody else that's not
Greitens? No, the dynamics are different. One of the most important things in a race like this is how early that the vacancy becomes open. When a vacancy comes open late, as when Matt Blunt decided not to run for governor, you have very little time for people to react. So they're out staking land, taking territory, everything else. In a situation like this, you have plenty of time for everybody to assess, to meet, to talk, to determine their strength, and for the herd to be thinned to where I think you'll have a consensus way before filing starts. And so to that extent, I think you will have a very unified front. People know on the Republican side what is at stake, and so I think that they will work together to come up with one strong nominee.
I have to laugh. I don't mean to jump in, but I'm going to sit over here with a bag of popcorn and watch the Josh Hawley, you know, QAnon side of the Republican Party fight among themselves and coalesce around a governor who you guys might say he was canceled. We think it's a consequence that he, you know, did what he did. So for a Democrat on our side to watch the Republican, it's not going to be kumbaya. I think it's going to be a bloodbath, and I'm going to love watching it continue to push farther and farther and farther to the right.
Wishful thinking.
I'll add to that. I get the popcorn side of it, but I'm also terrified of the race to the furthest right.
Oh,
I mean, we already see that with Eric Schmidt in his time as AG, pushing things like the China lawsuit, fighting to kill the ACA, or even the Texas lawsuit. I mean, I see a guy that we used to think was a moderate fighting to be further and further to the right. And if that's what this primary looks like, it's not going to be good for the state.
Let me take a second, though. Scott Sifton's in the Democrat side. Mm. When you thought it was against Roy Blunt, look, I think if Roy Blunt came to the Republican primary, very, very hard to beat with Joe Biden in the White House, Democrats controlling Congress. However, you take, if it is Eric Schmidt, very hard to beat, Ann Wagner, Mike Kehoe, if it's Eric Greitens. I know when people talk about religious issues and integrity, most of them, we all roll our eyes, and most of them don't mean it. They're just full of the hot air when they talk about religious values. However, some Republicans actually do. Humphreys is one that comes to mind. Actually means it when he talks about those things. They're not going to vote for the guy that ties the woman in the basement. They might vote for the woman. They're going to vote for the top law enforcement officer over the guy that's been arrested so many times he doesn't take his mugshot anymore. What if you do? Democrats do get that golden ticket. It's Greitens and it's a 50-50 shot.
Well, I worry still with him as the nominee, but I do think it gives us a better chance to make the case that we're not the crazies here. Sorry?
Do they take it away from Sifton?
You know, I'm not sure it's Sifton's to begin with. I think he's probably the most credible candidate in the race right now. But we don't know who all is going to get in. And I would, for one, want to be cautious in suggesting that it's...
Assuming we get to filing day, Eric Greitens files, is Scott Sifton the Democrat nominee?
I don't know if he'll be the Democratic nominee, but he's going to put up a tough fight.
Yeah. He's going to run no matter what?
Scott Sifton?
Yeah.
Going
to be Sifton?
I think so. I think he's left enough. I think he's voted against for killing so many babies and taking so many guns away that he'll do just fine.
Who's going to file, David Barklage? Republican side.
Oh, on the Republican side, Eric Schmidt for sure. I think Eric Greitens will test the waters and then step back out.
Really?
I think it's Schmidt. And then you've got, you know, Jason Smith and Ann Wagner and John Bruner, people that are all very seriously considering it. I think they're going to determine whether or not that they can support Schmidt or stand down.
What happens?
I think it'll be Eric Schmidt.
And Eric Greitens?
And Eric Greitens, but I agree. I think he'll back out.
I think it's going to be Schmidt Greitens. It's going to be interesting. Ryan's going to eat a lot of popcorn watching
the fight. I'm
going to
eat a lot of popcorn. But I do want to say one thing about Roy Blunt, if I can. He also emceed the inauguration in D.C.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
After a tumultuous time, mm-hmm. that to step up and say, I'll be the person that does this and honors the tradition regardless of party, I thought that was a big move.
That's who he is, Niangua pride. Let's talk about your bill. There are public health departments here in St. Louis County. Pretty aggressive moves, maybe the most aggressive in the state.
Right.
You've got a bill that would push that back. What would be, I guess everybody says if there is a situation, you should have some way to lock people down, theoretically. But what does your bill make hoops you have to go through to actually do that?
Well, here's what happened. St. Louis County came out with 480 pages of regulations to control COVID, and it included all types of shutdowns. Those 480 pages of rules, regulations, and laws had consequences. They had financial consequences, and there were criminal penalties on some of them. They were all made out by one unelected person who was in a job that she wasn't even the person. She was there on a temporary basis. She made up 480 pages of laws without one legislative body that was elected.
Will your bill make that go through a legislative body?
Absolutely. It requires that it goes through the legislative body, the local legislative body, which would be the council here or the Board of Governors or wherever in any of the other counties. But we've got to keep it local, and we've got to have oversight from people that are elected. And the thing that was missing in all of this is public input. When one person makes a rule, never goes to the public and says, how will this affect you, and has no care about that, that's wrong. The people that are elected are the ones that need to have...
How should this be done?
Oh, well, you know, I think we need to refer to the experts, and we haven't done enough of that.
But from a governmental standpoint, what checks should you go through to do a lockdown or a mask order or
whatever?
Well,
I think it depends on the case. Sometimes we have to act fast, and we have to rely on people who are put in those positions with the expertise and the knowledge to make decisions.
So you should have an open-ended, like with COVID, one person can make a decision
sometimes,
unchecked, open-ended.
Sometimes, but it's not unchecked, because the fact is the elected folks can step in and override them if necessary. If we'd had a state that came in with leadership, with a governor that provided guidelines,
Would you like the guidelines the governor from Bolivar would have put on?
Might have liked some of them if he'd done something. But the fact is he did nothing.
Don't you think the people in St. Louis are very happy with the mask orders and the lockdowns they had? And the people in St. Clair County would have shot at you if you'd have tried to make them stay at their house.
Well, I think there's truth to that. But the fact is we needed masks across the state. And not having them across the state caused a problem for everyone, even in those places that
had
them.
Well, you could have Governor Cuomo and be a good time to be in the gravedigger business.
I'm not going to go there.
What do you think? I mean, how should you lock people down?
Well, first of all, no one likes it. Right. And that's the thing, that there's a line that gets drawn, and with all due respect, it's that you don't like the lockdown. Well, nobody likes a lockdown. But when you're acting in the middle of a global pandemic and someone says we have to do something because we're getting no guidance from the federal government or the state government, so it goes to one person that apparently has to write these regulations, the burden is put here to say, well, okay, here's what I think, and throw it out there. We were acting in a nobody knew what was going on. We were talking about this earlier. It's the fear of the unknown, right? And I said this from a long time ago. People were scared to make a mistake.
Of course.
And so from a lockdown perspective, look, these things save lives. I mean, we know this. It's not hard. We're not asking you to, you know, shove a can of green beans up your backside. We're asking you to wear a mask. We're asking you to stay home. The economic disaster that's happened from it, we've got to figure out a way to come back.
Telling, right? That's different.
You're told to wear pants every day, aren't you? I mean, the fact is, government has
articles. But no shirt, no shoes, no
underwear.
Service.
This one saves. If you're a Republican, you got to wear underwear every day. That's true.
Let me say, my bill doesn't in any way prohibit the local health authorities from doing anything. For 15 days, they can do whatever they want.
Right.
All it does is has oversight after that, saying share the information with us. Let's make sure it's right. Then we can sell it to the public. And if you're exactly right, they can extend that forever.
Right.
Prediction time, David Barklage. Does a form of this pass?
Yes.
Your bill pass?
Absolutely.
This pass?
I expect something will.
Something will, yeah.
I think so, too. I think if you keep it local, though, you're going to be in a better spot. Yep. Last prediction around, we have time to talk about it, IP reform. Democrats keep winning these ballot measures. Going to make it harder to put it on the ballot?
I think IP reform needs to be very careful. Most major initiatives in the state that have been good, the ethics commission, ethics reform, ending the Pender gas machine, term limits, tax reform, were all done by IPs, by citizens. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that we should allow a legislature to control all the determinations in this state. Now, constitutionally, I believe in raising the thresholds, but I do not believe statutorily all we're doing is making it so billionaires can pass it and take it away from people.
Well, with a minute left, this legislature will decide who won the week.
Well, I hate to say it, but Eric Schmidt, you know, he's positioned himself for U.S. Senate, and he actually did something good for a change this week.
Won the week.
I'm going to say the Missouri House. This week, we probably did something that's unheard of. We passed 5 different major bills.
Guns and abortion? No, I'm just kidding. No. What do you got?
I think number one, Roy Blunt, and two, I have to tell you, my conversations with several Republicans looking at that seat, yep. John Brunner cared more about the right person running than him running, and the same thing I heard from several congressional members, they care about the party and the country before their own ambition.
So I'm going to take 2 things. I'm going to congratulate Roy Blunt on a wonderful career, but I'm going to say the Democratic Party won the week because we didn't slam our hand in the door at the minute that he announced he wasn't running, and we're going to let the Republicans, you know, fight it out.
I'm going to say Senator Dave Schatz worked very hard on a gas tax proposal. If you get outside 270, you've got to do something to fix Missouri's roads. It's the kind of thing adults do. Dave Schatz stepped up and moved something through the Senate. A great credit to him. And I'll just announce you're going to be our Statesman of the Year. March 30th is going to be our banquet in Jeff City. Please come join us honoring a statesman that really earned his spurs again this week in Dave Schatz. We'll see you in 2 weeks after spring break on This Week in Missouri Politics.
This Week in Missouri Politics, sponsored by the Missouri Association of Career Fire Protection Districts, Spire, and Sterling Bank.